WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio. This is Jason Mann, and I have a very special guest today. It's Second City Saint, one of my favorite, funniest people on Twitter. So how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm good. I wasn't aware that I was one of your favorite people on Twitter. That's pretty flattering.
Yeah, well, you're very amusing and have good insights into wrestling. So,
I try.
Yeah, well, you succeed, and you're also breaking a barrier in WrestleSpective Radio history. You are the first woman guest that I've ever had. So
wow, that's impressive. No pressure.
Yeah, you're like Rosa Parks or something. I don't know. anyway, we're going to talk about a very fun match today. The main event of SummerSlam 2009. It was a TLC match between World Heavyweight Champion Jeff Hardy and CM Punk. And as probably people can tell by your Twitter name and by, you talk about him a lot, CM Punk is probably your favorite wrestler. So why do you like CM Punk so much?
I really don't know. Honestly, the CM Punk Jeff Hardy feud is actually what got me back into watching wrestling. And I think it was just because at the time it was such a good story, and the way that he really carried the story with his whole gimmick of being straight edge and Jeff Hardy being, you know, not so straight edge. So at first it was just that he was a great storyteller. And then, you know, after I found him in the WWE, I went back and I watched a bunch of his Ring of Honor matches and things like that. And I realized how great of a worker he was too, and just an all around great wrestler.
Yeah, you know, and he's really, I think it's interesting how he's evolved in WWE, and he's managed to, like, keep his individual personality and his individual style, like, even though he's, you know, he's been there for, you know, 3 or 4 years now, and, you know, WWE tends to kind of like its guy to kind of be generic and kind of do a lot of the same stuff, and yet he's managed to fit in and succeed there while maintaining his individuality.
I agree. I think, and they've used him too before. They've used him as a face, they've used him as a heel, and he's still, it's always been very consistent in his individuality, as you said.
Yeah.
But it works in a lot of different ways for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of the origins of this feud, and it's kind of an interesting groundbreaking thing, as you mentioned, with, Jeff, they sort of acknowledge Jeff's issues with drugs and kind of being a free spirit. I don't think they did it sort of like half-handedly. Like, they obviously didn't say, "Hey, Jeff, you're a drug addict." They were more like, "Well, Jeff likes what he does, and he likes to have fun and whatever." And then Punk's kind of the mean straight edge guy who's calling him out on it. It was, I guess, kind of how it was presented. But it began with, of course, Punk won the Money in the Bank for the second time, and at that WrestleMania. And I remember him kind of getting booed when he won it, even though, you know, he was still a face and was pretty popular at that point. But I think, I don't know if it was just kind of the idea of a guy winning it for the second time that fans wanted somebody new, or whether that crowd just didn't like Punk for whatever reason, or if people were, you know, getting tired of him, you know, of the straight edge thing, you know, maybe all those things a little bit.
I think a lot of it too was Edge was the champion at the time, correct?
Yeah, and then Undertaker won the title at that WrestleMania.
I think a lot of people didn't really want to see Punk face Edge for the title when he won Money in the Bank, just because I think they knew that, you know, Punk might be the guy to kind of be the answer to Edge.
Oh, okay.
Of course, then Undertaker won anyway.
Yeah.
But
oh no, that was, I'm sorry, that was 25. That was what was that? That was Orton and Triple H for the, that was the Raw. What was SmackDown that year? I'm totally blanking on this. I must look it up because, it was Cena, Edge, and Cena, Edge, and Big Show, and Cena won the title from Edge. So Edge was the champion. You're right about that.
Okay.
And then Edge won it back very, pretty soon afterward. Anyway, so yeah, at that point, you know, he held Money in the Bank for a couple. You know, he was obviously carrying the briefcase, and then he kind of got involved with a little feud with Umaga, which ended up being Umaga's last run in WWE. He was sort of I think he beat Umaga like in a Samoan strap match at Extreme Rules.
At Extreme Rules, that was a really good match as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that was Umaga's basically his last match there. And then later at that, it was that night. Yeah, it was at Extreme Rules. The main event was Jeff Hardy and Edge for the world title. And then, you know, Edge and Jeff Hardy were kind of going back and forth. And then Jeff won the was it a ladder match that he won? It was just a singles match. So, or no, it was a ladder match. It was a ladder match. So, yeah, of course, yeah, Jeff Hardy won a ladder match, and then right then, you know, CM Punk came out and cashed his Money in the Bank contract and defeated Jeff to win the title, which, you know, Punk was still a babyface at this point, and mm-hmm. But it was definitely, you know, a heelish thing to do, even though, you know, the year before when he'd cashed in the Money in the Bank, he did it to Edge under the very much the same circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of interesting how, you know, doing the same thing essentially, and just, you know, obviously one was against a heel who had, of course, become famous for cashing in Money in the Bank, but the other was against obviously somebody the fans love. But, you know, it's interesting how, like, only one guy in the history of the Money in the Bank cash-ins has actually, like, done it, like, in an honorable way. You know, like, Rob Van Dam actually, like, okay, we're going to fight at this event, and, you know, I'm going to give you advance notice, and I'm not going to just sneak up on you and win the title. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm not sure that's really the way that Money in the Bank is meant to be handled, though. Maybe it's just because they've set it up in a way where someone does come in and cash it underhandedly so many times. I like it better that way. If someone, you know, just says, all right, I'm cashing this in right now, they do kind of make it a little underhanded because people quite often cash in, you know, right after a match when someone's down and out.
Right.
But I could maybe do without that. You know, maybe if they just cashed in, you know, at the opening of Raw one day, there are no matches whatsoever yet. They just come out and say, yeah, guess what? Raw's opening with my Money in the Bank match. That'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah, that would definitely be interesting.
I think it takes away from it if they plan it in advance, though.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see both sides, because there's definitely the excitement of, you know, of it happening suddenly, and that's led to a lot of really cool, exciting moments. But, and, you know, kind of like the, you know, anything can happen kind of thing. But at the same time, like, there have been so many cash-ins now that I think, like, it's sort of lost its appeal a little bit, the surprise element, just because we've kind of seen it like so many times, especially now that they have two Money in the Banks a year instead of one.
Right. I get the same feeling. Like, when The Miz cashed in, especially because they were asking every week, oh, is this the week he's going to cash in? And even Miz kind of got into that, like, oh, maybe I'll cash it in now. There's really no more element of surprise anymore, you're right.
Yeah. So, you know, and I kind of like, I don't know, I like wrestling to, like, I don't like it when they are going through a show and then they like suddenly make matches like midway through the show. It's like, oh, we didn't plan any of this. We're just going to be like haphazard and like, you know, kind of do whatever we want. And right. I like the idea of like, you know, oh, yeah, we plan all this. We organize all this, even if it's not really organized. It makes it feel more substantial.
Fair enough. Of course, the most of CM Punk's cash-ins, I believe both of them pretty much just ended with a GTS after, you know, a minute or two. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Really, how much planning is needed for that?
Well, that's true. Yeah. You know, I think there's good elements on both, good arguments on both sides. I just think like we've seen the cash-ins like so often that like I would rather they approach it in a different way. But I understand the value of the cash-ins, and in both of these cases for Punk, I think it really worked out very well. You know, obviously the first time when he cashed in with Edge, I mean, that was really his elevation to a new level in WWE, and he handled it pretty well. It wasn't necessarily the best, you know, presented storyline in some cases, but, you know, I mean, obviously he's now, you know, one of the guys they really rely on, you know, and are really strongly behind right now, and that's that's pretty cool. And he's had, you know, good feuds with Cena and Orton and, you know, other guys in the past couple of years, so good times. So anyway, after the cash in, obviously, you know, he was kind of, you know, you know, Jeff Hardy kind of called him out for, you know, how he, you know, how he did it. And then they had a rematch where Punk actually, I think, if I recall correctly, Jeff gave him like a thumb to the eye. And there was like a whole thing of whether Punk was like faking the thumb to the eye or whether, you know, or, you know, they were kind of playing the whole thing where you weren't exactly, I mean, you knew that obviously, yeah, CM Punk's turning. This is obviously the story they're developing. But like, you know, it wasn't absolutely clear by the character, you know, that there was still some doubt as to whether he was being a bad guy or whether he was like a victim of circumstances.
Right. I don't know. I guess I think that was kind of dumb, though. The whole, oh, some to die, and then he kicks the ref and gets disqualified. I mean, what was really the point? I guess the point of that was to turn him heel, but...
Yeah, well, I mean...
I didn't like the way they did that.
You didn't like the way they did it? Okay. I mean, that wasn't my favorite part of it, but I liked some of the other things where, you know, it was sort of like... I think that like people were, I remember people talking during this time and were really like impatient. We're like, oh, CM Punk should just turn already. What are they waiting for? Kind of thing. But I don't know. I like the way they kind of build a little bit slowly, and they were, you know, like I said, you weren't sure the motivations character, and you know, they had like John Morrison beat him like in a non-title match, which on one level may have been a little silly because, you know, a guy like CM Punk and you're trying to establish him, you know, pretty strongly, maybe losing John Morrison at that point isn't like the best way to do it. But at the same time, like, you know, it gave Punk an opportunity to sort of like, you know, knock out, attack Morrison from behind and knock him out with the GTS, which, you know, and you could see like his frustration boiling, but he was still like, you know, Punk was saying, well, you know, I'm still here for the fans or whatever. It wasn't like he suddenly became evil. It was like he slowly became evil, and circumstances sort of led him to, you know, take advantage of, you know, of situations and to, you know, kind of slowly slide down that path, which I think is more realistic.
I agree. It's definitely more realistic. It's more interesting too, if you have to kind of watch every week to see that character development of him actually becoming a heel too. It keeps people tuned in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, and then that was kind of later after that, I think they had an in-ring confrontation just before the Night of Champions match, where, you know, they kind of dealt with Jeff Hardy's drug issues, you know, more directly, you know, and Punk was really playing up the straight edge thing, you know. I mean, he's always, of course, been straight edge, but like the preachy aspect of it, I mean, you know, that was really, he hadn't done that as much as a babyface. It was more like, I'm straight edge, whatever, you know, it's what I choose to do, but it wasn't like, you know, when he's babyface, he doesn't really preach it, because obviously some people would get annoyed by that. But and then, yeah, Hardy beat him at Night of Champions to win the title back, and right. then the kind of the what solidified the heel turn, which was one of my favorite things, is after I think Hardy beat Morrison on SmackDown to retain the world title, and then Punk came out and was and then grabbed the microphone and said something like, you know, Jeff, you know, let me explain, or Jeff, you know, I forget the exact words, but basically he just, in mid-sentence, he it was like he was about to apologize, but then he grabbed the microphone and hit him and then attacked him. I thought that was really cool.
Right. That was one of my favorite moments.
Yeah. I mean, rather than just, you know, come out and attack him, like, you know, just like every single time you see a wrestler run in and attack somebody, it was just like a different way of doing it. And it was perfect. So, And then, yeah, I guess the main stuff after that was like, you know, Hardy and Punk had like a couple of matches on SmackDown, but then Matt Hardy actually got involved, who had been feuding with Jeff, but then sided with Jeff, sort of a kind of a weird deal they had. And then that, built to, this, big, TLC match. So, so what do you think of the match?
I thought the match was, it was a really good match. I guess some people kind of call it maybe a spot fest, especially with, you know, the Swanton bomb off the 30-foot ladder or whatever it was. But like I said, it was pretty much the match that got me back into watching wrestling seriously. So
yeah,
there's that. I almost want to compare it to the Undertaker Mankind Hell in a Cell match.
Okay.
Just because that match, I feel that match was pretty much a spot fest too.
Yeah.
And, you know, at one point they come out and they're trying to give Mankind his medical attention like they do with Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they both refuse it and run back in and all this stuff. And then Undertaker comes out at the TLC match and just chokeslams the F out of CM Punk.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like he does to Terry Funk in the Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah, that's good. I hadn't thought about that, but those are both good comparisons. Obviously, the difference here is that it comes toward the end of the match as opposed to the beginning. But yeah, right. Very comparable. That's true. I thought all the spots were good, and I thought that you know, there was definitely exciting stuff. They were working hard, and they didn't do anything that like really seemed like nonsensical. Like sometimes you'll see like guys like set up like a table at a point where it like makes no sense to have the table, and then you'll see somebody go through the table later, but it's like, you know, well, what was he trying to do there? That doesn't make sense. And there wasn't any of that. I kind of thought that it kind of took some nasty spills and didn't really like sell it like fully, like, you know, like it would have been, I don't know, like would have kind of been appropriate given the damage that they had, but that, you know, that was pretty minor. I mean, but for the most part, I mean, they had some really cool sequences. I loved when, like Hardy avoided the GTS and then slammed Punk into the ladder. And then he like Jeff grabbed a chair and then tried the corner splash, but then like Punk like caught him and then dropped him onto the chair, which was like sitting down. I mean, I thought that was really cool.
Right. I really like the part, Jeff puts himself through the table and Punk's there and then he just rolls out of the way. And they both actually sold that really well too.
Yeah.
If you go back to the selling, I think Punk sold a lot of the stuff a lot better than Jeff did.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jeff kind of started to sell some things. Like he had, I guess he hurt his ankle at one point in the match.
Yeah.
And kind of maybe hurt it again later at one point when they, I think it was when Punk did the suicide dive.
Mm-hmm.
He was grabbing his ankle again. And then, you know, towards the end of the match, his ankle was fine.
Yeah.
So I don't think there was a lot of continuity in Jeff selling.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and that kind of makes sense because I think Jeff's like a talented guy and he does some cool stuff. But I think of Punk as more, there's an expression about wrestling about like music between the notes where like the guys who really get wrestling and really understand it can, you know, have it all make sense and tell like a really good story, like in between all the moves. And I think of Punk as like a guy who's really good at that. Almost like a, you know, kind of like a modern version of like Jake Roberts, where Hardy's more of like, you know, he can have good matches and he can do exciting stuff, but like, I don't think of him as like a guy who thinks about his matches on that level as much, or at least he doesn't demonstrate that in his matches. Maybe he is a guy who thinks a whole lot about it. I don't know, but
I would agree with that. I don't think, like you said, Punk tells the stuff in between the wrestling really well. I think Jeff kind of more relies on only the wrestling to tell the story.
Yeah. And more like, I mean, not even like the high spots of the wrestling. I mean, more
right.
Like, yeah, I mean, like the big moves rather than like kind of the transitioning to the moves and stuff, you know. And
CM Punk even does stuff when he's not doing the moves, you know, like he plays with the crowd, you know, he'll blow them a kiss when he's about to, you know, mess someone up really bad or things like that. It steals their taunts.
Yeah, yeah, he's really good. I mean, and become better at playing with the crowd over the last, you know, few years, I think. I mean, I think he's even better in 2011 than he was in 2009, although he was, you know, certainly good then. But he's really, yeah, I mean, he's really developed that aspect of his game a lot, and that's really cool to see. Any other spots that stand out to you as just being really, really being innovative here?
I guess I already talked about it, the Swanton Bomb. We've seen that before, but I guess that was the tallest one ever.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, 30 feet, I mean, that was, you know, or what they said, I mean, it, you know, it looked, I don't know how tall it was, but it looked super crazy tall. Like, I could not believe how tall that ladder was.
And it was tall enough that the refs were even holding it during the spot.
Oh, okay, I didn't even notice that. I guess I was just...
I actually noticed that today when I was watching it again.
Okay.
I have two refs on either side of the ladder holding it while Jeff does his jump.
So. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's good. You know, safety first there. Yeah. A couple other ones that I thought were really interesting was like kind of Punk was tossed into the stairs in the outside, but like he climbs them and like jumps back, but then Hardy hits him with a chair. I mean, that was really cool.
That's a really good back and forth segment.
Yeah. And then And then there's a when Punk sets up a pretty tall ladder in the ring. Eventually Hardy gets him some from behind, and then Hardy's able to like climb above him. And then Punk tries an electric chair, and then gets him like in the GTS position. But then Hardy like gets like the sunset flip power bomb. And I thought that was really well. That was really smoothly done. Like there wasn't, you try to do like those counter reversals, and a lot of guys would just kind of make it look really rough. But they, I don't know, they had a really good. I mean, obviously they had a number of good matches during this time. They really had good chemistry, with each other in the ring.
That was actually a good series of reversal. They're on the ladder when they do that too, correct?
Yeah.
So that makes it even, 10 times harder for them to actually do it smoothly. And I agree with you. It's very well executed.
Right. And as far as the storytelling went, I mean, I thought really they were good moves and good sequences and everything, but I thought really toward the end when Hardy's kind of going nuts and he's like nailing Punk in the back with a bunch of chair shots. And then he clears the table, he nails him with the monitor, gets another chair to the face, and then sets up the spot we've been talking about, the super tall ladder, and goes to splash him instead of going to the for the belt, which the announcers even mentioned, who are Jim Ross, and it took me a long time to figure out, but Todd Grisham was his partner. All those WWE generic announcers pretty much sound the same to me, so I could not I it. Took me forever to be like, who is this? What? Why don't I recognize this guy? But anyway, so then instead of going for the belt, he takes off his shirt, he climbs the top, he hits the Swanton Bomb, and then it just like it's nuts. And that's obviously like really insane. But then what I like afterward is, as we talked about, Hardy gets stretchered out with the gets the neck brace, and then Jeff sort of refuses, and then you see Punk slide into the ring, and then you see like Jeff like crawling back onto the floor, stumbling, like climbing up the stairs. And I love the look in Punk's face, like how agonized and how shocked he is that like Jeff has gotten up from this, and like he realizes, oh my God, Jeff won't die, and
I was
then.
actually going to comment on that too. He just has this face. It's like, oh my God, this guy just won't stay down. What do I have to do?
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And then Punk like climbing up on one leg, and then Hardy finally catches up to him, and they do like a big slugfest, and then Punk is able to like kick him down, and which was all very another vicious fall on Jeff's part. I mean, Jeff obviously did a lot of bumping and a lot of vicious stunts here, and then Punk was able to go up and grab the belt, and that was I was. Certainly, I enjoyed the match, and the match was fine until the last 3 minutes. But I think that's like a really transcendent ending that like just put it at another level for me.
And then the return of the Undertaker, did that bump it up that much farther for you, or do you think that ruined it?
I don't think it really did either. I mean, it was there. It was fine. Like I understand why they would do it. As a obviously, okay, Undertaker is the next feud, and we want to move on to him, and we want to do something to kind of send these fans home happy now that CM Punk won the title back, in the main event. It was. I didn't have a problem with it. I wasn't like, oh, great, Undertaker. I did think the way that the Undertaker Punk feud went did not do a whole lot for Punk. In fact, it did almost nothing for Punk. Kind of hurt his momentum, and the timing of it kind of seemed weird, because he was kind of just going so strong at that point. But as far as this individual thing, I didn't have a problem with it. What were your feelings on it?
I didn't mind it. At the time, I didn't really understand it, but then it went into the whole Undertaker feud. But I do agree with you that the Undertaker feud really it didn't do anything for Punk. But apparently, the story that I heard with that was that Punk was actually forced to drop the title to Undertaker earlier than he was supposed to, because apparently he made some offhanded comments about the way that John Cena was dressed on their European tour.
Yeah,
So.
it was something like that. Punk had somebody, maybe it might have been Undertaker, mentioned Punk like, oh, like he wasn't really dressed like a champion should be dressed, and then Punk said something, yeah, like what about John Cena? And which I don't know, that always seems silly to me because Punk, it's not like Punk's like a guy who should be dressing like in suits, like Punk's
Right.
like a guy who should, who really shouldn't be. And obviously, that's internet gossip. Who knows if it's true, and who knows how Punk was dressed anyway. But yeah, it's funny if that's true, how something like that can be like a thing that stalls the guy's momentum. And obviously, you know, CM Punk's fine. He's, you know, had a, since then he certainly, like, he's the pretty much the top heel on Raw right now, other than Miz, and pretty much 1A, 1B there, and it's, you know, and obviously having great matches and doing great stuff, so I think he'll be fine. But that was kind of a weird situation.
Yeah, he did recover, like you said, he's the top heel on Raw now. I just wish they would have done a lot more with that Undertaker feud.
Yeah, that could have been really cool, and then it basically just ended after two shows, and Undertaker beat him pretty much clean clean in a Hell in the Cell match that went like 8 minutes, I think. So
it wasn't very long at all. That was really disappointing.
Yeah,
especially after their whole deal at Breaking Point.
Yeah, you liked that match too a lot, right?
Oh, I love that match. Honestly, okay. I was watching it, probably shouldn't admit this, but I was watching it on a stream illegally, and my stream cut out right before the first finish. So I guess that was what happened with that? Who won first?
I think, I haven't seen the match, but if I recall correctly, I think Undertaker gets him in the Hell's Gate, but then Teddy Long comes out and said, oh, the Hell's Gate is banned.
Okay, right. So and I saw that. I didn't see Teddy Long coming out because my stream actually died. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting here at my computer freaking out that Undertaker won on that. And then finally my stream comes back at the end when I see that, oh, Punk won. So it was just, there's so much, I don't know, I guess there was just a lot of emotion for me in that match. And I really like the swerve finishes. I know everyone hates them. They're so bad. And, oh, Vince Russo writing, blah, blah, blah. But I love them. It's great.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's something that if you do them rarely, they can be really effective and really good. The problem is that if you do them all the time and then the Vince Russo thing is, and you have to do them in the right situations. And
right.
So
that I definitely think that was the right situation, especially because they were in Montreal, the whole Montreal screw job 2.0 sort of thing.
That was... Yeah. Well, that was the problem with that is that was the Montreal screw job 88.0. That's more.
I guess.
Thing. But I see your point. I mean, like on an individual level, like I think it was fine. If you like, you know, the people who have lived through Montreal screw jobs, you know, 88 times in the past 15 years, maybe not quite as excited about it. But I see your point. And you know, like I said, you know, everything worked out fine in the end. So. But cutting out that's your lesson to not watch streams. So
I guess you're right.
Anything else you want to talk about as far as you know how the feud went?
Do you want to talk about Jeff Hardy leaving?
Oh yeah, well that's pretty important. Yeah, we should mention that because that was the next SmackDown, right?
Yeah, I believe so. They had their steel cage match. Lucha leaves WWE.
Yeah,
I guess the premise was that. Jeff Hardy had a reality show that he was going to do with his brother on MTV. And then 2 weeks later, Jeff Hardy gets arrested.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I mean, this was really basically the end of, I mean, everyone was really like into Jeff Hardy. I mean, like, you know, he was at the peak of his popularity. He was really, other than Cena, he was probably their most popular guy. And that angle, that ending was awesome. I mean, that cage match was really good. And then the end with like Jeff kind of like crying and saying goodbye, and you think it's going to be like that feel good moment, and then
Punk attacks
him. Right? Yeah. Then that was great. I mean, people were mad about that. I mean, people were really mad.
I wasn't mad.
Well, okay. A lot of people were mad about that. I mean, kids. I remember some kids in that audience were like crying and really angry. I mean, that was really good. That was really good stuff. I mean, the whole feud, I mean, it was really had like an old school kind of feel. I mean, they switched the title around a lot. That was kind of the only, you know, 2009 element of it. And, you know, maybe, you know, the doing a ladder match in general is more of a, you know, 2009 than a 1989 kind of thing. But it felt, it really did kind of really build some like pretty like deep seated emotions, you know, and built on, you know, and the way they brought kind of the reality in with, you know, the straight edge versus, I guess drug addict, I guess is appropriate, given what we, you know, we know about Jeff Hardy, but yeah, that whole thing, I mean, some really cool stuff. And and it's weird that basically now Jeff is like a guy who's looked at as like a lunatic who, you know, is way washed up. Even though I actually thought some of his TNA like character work, as far as like building, you know, kind of developing like his heel persona, like I actually think was actually really good. Obviously, though, he can't seem to stay clean to show up to main events, you know, in good shape. So that's you don't really want to build a guy around a guy like that, no matter how good he is at, kind of being a weirdo.
Right. I think it's just weird that they turned him heel so quickly after everyone thought that Cena was going to turn heel with the whole Nexus angle. And it was kind of like, we'll turn our top face heel right away. Hmm. I just think it was really, really quick. And I, like we talked about with CM Punk's heel turn, it was drawn out and slow in a good way.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. And I just wanted to comment too. You said how CM Punk and Jeff Hardy and Jeff Hardy leaving really toyed with everyone's emotions because he was such a top face. I liked how they continued that even after Jeff Hardy left, how the next week on SmackDown, CM Punk came out to Jeff Hardy's music with his face paint and everything. And
oh, yeah.
Everyone was so torn up about that. They showed a lot of the kids' faces in the audience then, too, and like they just looked so not impressed that
that's
CM Punk
right.
would actually do that after.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. That was really good. I completely forgot about that, but that was awesome. Yeah. Yeah, that was good stuff. So yeah, definitely, a really fun feud. I mean, SmackDown was kind of all, like guns a-blazing, like at this point. I mean, it really had some strong in-ring stuff. I like Mysterio was, was Intercontinental Champion. He was having some really good matches. That was kind of when Morrison turned and he was working with guys who could, lead him to good matches. And Jericho was on the show. Edge was on the show, I think, although I think he got hurt. And
that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I think that was when they were doing the Edge Jericho team briefly. And then he got hurt, but that led to, Jericho, which was pretty good stuff too. So a lot of fun stuff, definitely a good time on SmackDown. And yeah, I've definitely gone like back and forth on watching SmackDown. Cause I've had times where I just haven't had it, or whatever, obviously Raw kind of being the newsworthy show, so I just kind of tend to watch that. But SmackDown, this is definitely one of the periods where SmackDown was kind of, can't miss for a while. And I think
there was a long time for me that SmackDown was the A show.
And yeah.
I'd maybe watch Raw if I thought it might be exciting, but wasn't, gotta watch Raw. It was never like that when SmackDown was my A show.
Mm-hmm. And it was definitely the stronger, and most of the time I guess it's been that way, and at least in the last 3 or 4 years, it was definitely the stronger wrestling show. So, mm-hmm. Which is always for people who like wrestling, that's always good. So,
right.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for taking the time out to talk to this match with me, and for breaking ground in our WrestleSpective Radio's history. So, and I'm sure everyone's very proud of you for that. So. And
thank you for having me.
All right, no problem. And thanks everyone for listening. And of course, you can check us out at WrestleSpective.com or FairToFlare.com. And we'll be posting podcasts there and doing interesting stuff. So please check us out. And if you want to follow Second City Saint on Twitter, that's 2ND City Saint. And So definitely do that. Like I said, one of my favorite people on Twitter. So thanks again and goodbye.